the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
If you're a small business person, or let's say you're Larry Lots of Bucks, you've dodged a bullet. The Build Back Better plan did not go through Congress, and it doesn't look like it's likely passage this year, but it's still early. But what does this mean for everybody? Let's talk about that. Joining me on the program is tax CPA Dan Pilla. Dan, we dodged a bullet. I don't think people realize what Build Back Better would have done to small business. It would have got rid of the exclusion ratio on Sub S. It would have added a 3.8% Medicare tax. It would have raised income tax rates. It would have raised estate tax rates and the amount subject to estate taxes. Let's talk about that. And what are the possibilities they still may try to get this through Congress?
Well, they haven't given up on it, Jim. First of all, for sake of clarity, I'm not a CPA. I am a tax litigator. I'm admitted to practice the United States Tax Court and admitted to practice before the Internal Revenue Service. So I'm on the litigation side of the issue, not so much the tax preparation side. Our firm does tax preparation, but it's mostly remedial for folks that are in trouble with the IRS. And so my background for over 40 years is litigating with the IRS. I've represented small businesses and individuals in the U.S. Tax Court and before the IRS in literally many hundreds of cases over the years. And helping small businesses to get themselves out of trouble with the IRS. So there's just a little bit of background. Now, in specific response to your question, the answer is they aren't giving up, Jim. Yeah, Build Back Better has fallen apart at the seams, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing for small businesses, but they have not given up. And the folks on the Democratic side of the aisle don't ever give up when it comes to tax increases and increasing the power of the Internal Revenue Service. One of the probably the most egregious part of the Build Back Better program was this proposal to fund the IRS to the tune of $80 billion over 10 years. That's $8 billion a year. They were going to spread it out over 10 years. Well, to put this in perspective, Jim, the IRS's budget right now is about $13 billion. So add another eight to that would almost double it. And then that would be the case going forward every year for 10 years. The IRS was going to plan to increase, and they're doing this anyway, Jim, because they've had a pretty significant increase in their 2022 budget anyway. All right. So that 2022 budget was passed in April of last year, taking the IRS through fiscal 2022, which will run out in September of this year. All right. And so that was another $1.3 or $4 billion that was added to the budget that they specifically designate for increased auditors, specifically pointed at small businesses. So even though Build Back Better died, and the $80 billion has you know, at least temporarily gone away, the IRS has not been deprived of budget increases, and they're going to use that money to target small businesses.
You know what I don't understand with the pandemic, the shutdowns, lockdowns, everything else, the restrictions, the mandates. It's making it very difficult for small businesses to make it. I mean, if you're a restaurant owner, Dan, and they tell you that, you know, you can only seat 25% of your normal crowd, social distancing, you have to check people's vaccine passports, all those things are making it difficult. On top of that, you throw all these taxes on these small businesses. I mean, this is insane.
Yeah. That's the only word to use, Jim, to describe what's going on. And it gets even worse because the literature that's been released from the IRS in 2021, there were two specific pieces of quote unquote studies that the IRS released regarding the so-called tax gap. The tax gap is the difference between the tax revenue that's owed to the IRS and the tax that's paid. Now, this is different from the accounts receivable ledger. The accounts receivable ledger arises when a person files a tax return that says, you know, I owe the IRS $5,000, but you only pay in $1,000. At that point, you owe the IRS $4,000. That becomes an accounts receivable. They know who owes the money. They know the year for which it's owed. They know how to track down the person that owes it. The tax gap is different, Jim. And so if you file a tax return that says you owe $5,000, but you arrived at that $5,000 either by failing to report income or overstating deductions. In other words, your tax return is not accurate. And let's say you really owe the IRS $8,000, not $5,000. That $3,000 makes up the tax gap. Now, the IRS doesn't know who owes the money. They don't necessarily know exactly how much is owed or how it arises. And so they make these tax gap determinations based on these fancy estimates. And I'll tell you where the estimates are pointed at small businesses. The IRS believes that small businesses in general, flow-throughs in particular, sub-S corporations and partnerships are cheating across the board on their tax returns, not so much by inflating deductions, but by hiding income. And this is what is driving the IRS's attack against small businesses, and frankly has been for a while, but they've escalated that now considerably during 2021. And all of the propaganda that you saw coming out of the Treasury Department in 2021 supporting Build Back Better and the $80 billion for the IRS, all of it, Jim, every bit of the propaganda was slamming small businesses as tax cheaters hiding income. Now, you know, we heard the 1% nonsense, but when you read the, particularly the statement that came out of the Treasury Department last September, they pointed it, they used the 1% as headlines, but the fact is they were blaming small businesses, flow-throughs, sole proprietorships, sub-S corps and partnerships.
Even though we might have dodged a bullet in the short term by not, I call it build back broke, basically another word for it. But in 2025, all those favorable tax deductions, the exemption on estates, that all gets sunsetted. So if you're a business owner, you may have dodged a short term bullet, but you got to remember this all expires in 2025.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jim. And that point you just made is lost on most people right now that are talking about tax reform and tax policy. They don't realize that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the Trump tax law changes, which changed about 70 or 75 different provisions of the tax code, all expire in 2025. This is one of the fundamental problems, in my opinion, Jim, with what's going on with tax policy in the United States. The Internal Revenue Code now consists of more than 4 million words that were changed more than 5,900 times between 2001 and 2019. That doesn't even include the changes that occurred in 2020 and 2021 with all the COVID stuff that came out of Washington. And it's bad enough in terms of stability and the capacity of people to plan their affairs. It's bad enough when the tax code is changing at such a pace, 5,900 changes in 20 years. What's even worse, Jim, is the expiring and temporary tax law changes. People don't realize that our tax code is loaded up with temporary provisions that expire on X date unless Congress does something. Every single one of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act provision, without exception, expire in 2025 if Congress does nothing. And this, Jim, makes it impossible for people to plan their affairs. As far as I'm concerned, this might be the single most egregious problem with our tax code right now, is the instability in the system and the inability of businesses to plan, really even from day to day. You know, you look at those 5,900 code changes, Jim, 500 of those code changes occurred in 2008. Another 600 occurred in 2010. And so people cannot plan their affairs, and particularly businesses that have long-term vision. You know, it's one thing for a service-oriented business to plan their affairs, but it's vitally important for businesses that are asset-heavy, inventory, equipment, tools, materials, supplies, these types of things, to plan their affairs, because they don't know how the tax code is going to treat any of these things, Jim, literally from day to day, at least year to year.
In my career, Dan, every time we got a new president, we got a new tax bill. You know, I got in the profession with Reagan. He changed the tax laws. Bush came in. He changed the tax laws. Clinton changed them. George W. changed them. Obama changed them. Trump changed them. And Biden's trying to change them. So, you know, this is one of the things that I think that creates a lot of instability. So if you're a business and you're planning something, let's take a family business. You would like to pass it on to your children, but the business, you know, you don't know if you're going to be able to do that depending on where the tax code goes on estate planning.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's not just estate planning, it's capital gains as well, because, you know, businesses are, especially the asset heavy businesses, you've got the patriarch or matriarch of the business that is thinking, well, I want to sell this business to my kids. Okay, fine. Well, you got substantial capital gains tax on the sale of the business, and maybe the patriarch or matriarch says, well, you know, we can't afford this substantial hit on these businesses, on the business assets when we sell it off, and so it creates significant planning problems. The other thing that creates substantial planning problems for businesses, Jim, are the depreciation rules. You know, you went through the litany of all the tax law changes between Reagan and Bush Senior and Clinton and Bush W and Obama and Trump and now Biden. Every single one of those presidents changed the depreciation rules, Jim. Every single one of them. And so now you've got businesses, again, the asset intensive businesses, you know, they need tools and equipment. They need, structural facilities to operate. They need these hard assets. How do they plan when the depreciation rules are changing all the time?
Makes it very difficult. It almost seems, Dan, I'm just looking over the last 2 years, that there's almost a anti-small business atmosphere that has taken over Washington. And I just think about, like, during the pandemic, they closed down restaurants, gyms, and all kinds of small businesses because of COVID. But yet the big box stores, I could walk into Costco, Target, or Walmart and not worry and get COVID, but if I went into the local gym, I would get COVID. I mean, so there were a lot of things that were aimed against small businesses that did a lot of harm. In fact, put a lot of them out of business.
Yeah, there's no question about it. The attack on the service industry during COVID is, in my opinion, reprehensible. It's inexcusable. It's unforgivable. And I think what's justifying that attitude, Jim, is what I spoke to earlier in the broadcast, and that is Washington believes, the Treasury Department believes, that small businesses are cheating on their taxes across the board. And what they want, Jim, I'll tell you this, and this goes back a long way. The IRS believes that we're, and this is the mantra they use in their literature: where there's information, there's compliance. All right. And so if you've got a small business out there, let's say Jane and Joe American, that are operating, let's just say a small grocery store, for example, you got all kinds of people that come into the store and they pay for their groceries with cash. Well, that cash is not necessarily reported. Now, my experience with small businesses is most of them overpay their taxes. The vast majority overpay their taxes. They do not cheat on their tax returns. But the IRS believes, because there's no information associated with that transaction, that the business is cheating across the board. So they don't want these small businesses operating, Jim. They want everybody on some information kind of a system. And so, forget the small business, the Jane and Joe American that own the grocery store. Let's have Walmart and Target be the nation's grocery stores, because we know these corporations are going to report everything anyway. And now Mr. and Mrs. American that were running their small corner grocery store, they're now employees at Target or Walmart. And guess what? They get a W-2, and that information is reported to the IRS.
Dan, what are you advising clients to do? We've got a situation now. We dodged a bullet short term, but these people are relentless. They always come back. The history has been, at least recently, for higher taxation. And even though Trump lowered tax rates, he also got rid of the SALT deduction, which, you know, for somebody like myself in California, or you live in New York, you know, not being able to deduct state taxes when they're that high, or property taxes, is a big tax increase.
Yeah, it is a tax increase. But remember, Jim, it was a cap on SALT, not the elimination of SALT. So it was capped at $10,000. Now, for folks that live in high tax states, you make a 100% valid point that you have realized a tax increase because of a reduction in your ability to write off your sales tax, your local income and real estate taxes, no question about that. So, you know, as far as what I'm advising small businesses is, and I say this in my book, Dan Pilla's Small Business Tax Guide, you have to assume the IRS is going to audit you. You have to assume that they're going to challenge your tax return, and not so much from the standpoint of deductions, although that is certainly always an issue with small businesses. You got to assume they're going to attack it from the standpoint of income. And so it is vitally important. And here's the history, Jim, and this statistical history is borne out in my personal experience. About 2/3 of all the problems that small businesses have with the IRS are records related. And I'll give you a classic example. An individual claims a deduction on their business tax return for business miles. And let's say they write off 5,000 business miles on their tax return and you know, whatever the dollar value is of that. Well, let's just say it's $5,000 for business value. They don't have the records to support the deduction. It's not that they're cheating by making up the deduction. They just don't have the records to support it. This is a big problem with small businesses, is not keeping the proper documentation to show what their business income and expenses are. And people need to understand, Jim, that the burden of proof is on the taxpayer. The IRS almost never has to prove you did it wrong. You as the taxpayer have to prove you did it right. And that is where the records come in. And if you can't support your tax return and the deductions and income claims on the return with proper records, you got a problem. And so this is something that business owners need to wrap their heads around. They got to get the proper documentation and the proper accounting going in their businesses to support their returns.
And so given the fact that we've sort of stalled on this Build Back Better plan with increased funding for the IRS, it's bad enough that we have tax law changes. So getting yourself documented, what other things can you do to plan for? For example, as we were discussing previously, we know that these tax laws sunset in 2025. So whether we pass anything from now to 2025, the tax laws will go back and change in another 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. And so I think the consideration is that, you know, particularly for businesses that are, again, asset intensive, you know, you got to plan your asset purchases between now and 2025 to take advantage of what the current tax laws are going forward. The tax laws occasionally, but not very often, have been made to apply retroactively, but that's pretty unusual, Jim. But there's nothing that stops Congress from actually doing that, because the Supreme Court has ruled that the constitutional rule against ex post facto laws does not apply to in a civil situation, and therefore it applies only to criminal laws, and therefore doesn't apply to tax laws. So the Supreme Court has given Congress the authority to basically backdate tax law changes. That's what they've done. Now, you know, as again, we don't see it that often, but it does happen. And so but nevertheless, you know, how do you anticipate that? You can only see what Congress puts on the table for a proposal, you know, to its credit, if there's any credit to be given. None of the Build Back Better provisions were retroactive that would applied, you know, backwards, backdating, so to speak. So that was some good news. So I would say take advantage of if you're an asset intensive business, take advantage of the opportunity to purchase those assets on favorable depreciation rules that exist right now.
And one of the things that we're urging our clients to do, and we're using it extensively, Dan, is taking advantage of Roth conversions and also backdoor Roths, because in the Build Back Better plan, they were going after these plans. So this is something that I've seen. They're playing around with going after pensions, Dan. We might talk a bit about this, because Obama wanted to limit total pension, IRAs, whatever you had accumulated, to no more than 3 million. And they're trying to go after Roth conversions and backdoor Roths. So they see a big honeypot out there called pensions that they'd like to get their hands on.
Yeah, it's a good point you make, Jim. There's trillions of dollars in private pension funds right now. And the United States government has got an on-budget debt of about, $30 trillion, I think we're up to right now, which the number is just, it's as if they don't even mean anything anymore. But, you know, back in the 1990s, you may remember this, President Clinton, his downstream Treasury Department, and when I say downstream, I mean some researchers that were on the lower levels of the totem pole in the Treasury Department, floated an idea surrounding the prospect of nationalizing private pension plans, particularly for the purposes of helping to balance the budget, and under the idea that, you know, we've got so many people out there with private pensions, and yet so many more people that are stuck relying on Social Security. And of course, Jim, it's just not fair, right? It's just not fair. And so that kind of went away. That trial balloon was floated, and it was shot down very quickly. And because it didn't come directly from Clinton-appointed Treasury officials, he was able to separate himself from the idea. But here we go again. It came up during the Obama administration, just like you said, and is coming up in Build Back Better. They want to steal the money in the pension plans. There's no doubt about it. And so folks need to keep their eyes on that. And this is where you come in, Jim. You got to, you know, you've been advising your clients and you'll keep your clients up to speed on what's going on with this stuff. But people need to know that they want to steal these pension plans. There's trillions in them and they want the money.
Yep. And like I said, that's the next big honeypot. And so we've seen this, you know, as you mentioned, Clinton went after this. Obama tried it. Biden tried it. And when it keeps coming up with Democratic presidents, they're going to keep at it until they get it.
Yeah, they never give up. You made that point. You're 100% right. They do not ever give up. And this is the, I think this is the fundamental difference between the leftists and, you know, what you might call conservatives or folks that would adhere to what we would call more constitutional principles. These, the left never gives up. Their vision is long and they're going after this stuff. And it doesn't matter how long it takes them to get it. They're going after it.
So a couple of things that we're recommending to some of our clients, you know, right now the exemption is what is it, Dan? 12 million, 60,000?
You're talking about estate tax exemption, yes, but it's north of 12 million, just a little bit. Yep.
Yeah, but we're telling people don't count on that because that goes away in 2025. So if you're doing any estate planning, you're doing a charitable remainder trust, you're doing an ILIT or life insurance trust to pay the taxes, don't stop doing that now just because you think you got lucky and the exemption is 12 million. That 12 million goes away in 2025.
Yeah. And what it does is it gets cut in half.
Yeah.
And not only does it get cut in half, but the highest estate tax rate goes back to 55%, which is, you know, it's just confiscatory at that point, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So this is something that, you know, if you're doing some planning and maybe your attorney or somebody told you, hey, you don't have to worry, it didn't get passed. I wouldn't count on that because we know this ends in 2025. Dan, as we close, tell our listeners about your book, especially if you're a small business owner. This is so important if you want to keep your head above water and keep the government from confiscating your income or your assets.
Yeah, the book is called Dan Pilla's Small Business Tax Guide, Jim. The book was literally 40 years in the making. And what I mean by that is I've taken all the experience that I've gleaned in 40 years of litigating against the IRS in tax court and at the administrative level on behalf of small businesses. And I took all of that experience and put it into this book in you know, 20 or 21 chapters. I go through all of the problems that are the largest, most significant problems that small businesses are likely to face at the hands of the IRS. And I show you exactly how to avoid those problems. And so, for example, we talk about staying out of trouble with independent contractors. It's a huge problem for small businesses. Using independent contractors, the IRS comes in and wants to convert them. We talk about mileage expenses and how to keep the records and exactly what mileage travel, what travel's deductible, you know, and on and on and on through all the problem areas that small businesses have. It's called Dan Pilla Small Business Tax Guide. It's available at my website, taxhelponline.com. It's all one word, taxhelponline.com.
All right. Well, listen, Dan, thanks for joining us on the program and updating us. Once again, don't stop planning because, you know, the one thing that we can count on for sure in life, death and taxes, and especially taxes.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.